Peter B. Collins, News and Comment. It's Tuesday, October 25th, 2016.
Tuesday in November, I took that stroll to cast my ballot at the local poll. The lines were long, but I didn't care. I had a water, a hat, and my folding chair. Walked up to the booth, didn't say a word. Sure that my voice would be heard. I hit that button, my vote was sent. But now nobody knows exactly where it went. They lost my vote, it isn't fair. I took a stand, doesn't anybody care? They lost my vote.
That's from the PBC Tax Deductible Music Archives. Ellen Buxtell wrote that song way back in the aughts. They lost my vote. And a new poll shows that 57% of Americans do not have confidence that their vote will be accurately counted 2 weeks from today in the presidential elections. This poll comes from the national polling agency PRRI, and it is stunning that many Americans, a majority, do not have confidence in our electoral system. Only 43% expressed, quote, a great deal of confidence that their vote will be counted correctly. By nearly 30 points, supporters of Clinton are more likely to feel confident than Trump backers. But political independents are the most skeptical, just over a third of them expressing a great deal of confidence. Independents are the most likely to say that the influence of wealthy interests overpowers voting. Fully 57% of Americans and two-thirds of independents agree that politics and elections are controlled by people with money and by big corporations, so it doesn't matter if they vote. And young people, at a rate of 66%, say they feel pessimistic about the value of participating in the elections. And so, as we break this down, you know, I have been long concerned about the integrity of our elections. This goes back to 2000, 2004, and I have not had confidence in our process ever since. Now, I know that some people I've supported have won elections, but that doesn't mean that the elections are credible. And as we approach this, it does present the possibility of popular outbursts, some sort of an uprising. If Donald Trump persuades his followers that it was rigged. Now, as we know, this is so maddening because it is rigged. And there are many efforts underway to manipulate the election on the part of Republicans and, we presume, on the part of Democrats. We saw during the Democratic primary process that the exit polls did not match the stated results in over a dozen of the state-level contests, while all of the Republican exit polls were very close to the published results. So we have to fear that the Clinton team has ways of manipulating the tabulation, other means of interfering with a credible vote count. And then we have Trump spreading the false fears of voter impersonation, of double voters, of dead people voting. It's bullshit, and we know it. But it has very, very effectively alarmed a part of the electorate that had confidence in elections because they knew that if they were going to be stolen, they were going to be stolen by the Republicans, their people. And then we look at the whole array of voter suppression tactics that Republicans are employing at the state level. We've been talking daily almost about Greg Palast's exposure of the interstate cross-check list. But the New York Times today has a story showing that even in jurisdictions where courts have smacked down Republican efforts to demand photo IDs and other hurdles that limit participation by people most likely to vote Democratic, that they blithely go on and prevent people from voting. Out in Wisconsin, where Republicans are running the machine, a federal court invalidated much of Wisconsin's restrictive elections law, concluding that it discriminated against minorities by requiring voters to produce photo ID cards. The remedy was straightforward. Henceforth, the court ordered, the state must promptly issue a credential valid as a voting ID to any person who applied for one. And then somebody not related to me named Treasure Collins, an 18-year-old female, went to one of the Wisconsin motor vehicle offices. She says, I brought everything my mom told me I'd need, school ID, copy of my birth certificate, social security number, but they told me I needed an original copy of my birth certificate all the way from Illinois. That's direct violation of the order from the judge. And the judge in this case has said that I don't think they're paying attention to me on this. He seems to be quite frustrated. Now, in Texas, a federal court that invalidated the state's voter ID law in July ordered recalcitrant state officials to change their public education campaign on the new ID rules. The reason? Critics complained that the campaign muddied the central point of the court's ruling that voters without a state-approved ID could simply sign an affidavit in order to cast a ballot. And over in Kansas, the chief elections official, Secretary of State Chris Kobach, who is the architect of the interstate cross-check list, he was forced by a court to reinstate 20,000 properly registered voters to the state's rolls, but they had to threaten him with contempt of court first. In North Carolina, plaintiffs complained to a judge that early voting plans in five big counties, including Charlotte, Mecklenburg County is the area there, embrace the same discriminatory practices that federal courts had outlawed this summer. So we have state officials simply flouting the law, the orders of federal judges, and we don't know what the outcome will be. I heard Rush Limbaugh this morning playing a bunch of sound bites from 1980 and the surprise landslide of Ronald Reagan that was not predicted by the polls, and they're trying to hold out hope that Donald Trump, who is now saying don't believe the polls because, well, they're not favorable to me, and that's not the case everywhere. He's still up in Ohio, and he is within a couple of points in the margin of error with Clinton in many states. This is not a runaway train at this stage. But I do believe that Clinton will roll up a margin of victory that is likely to be beyond the reach of graft, manipulation. But if people are soured, don't believe their vote will count, does count, then many people will psych themselves out and take themselves out of the election. And that's where turnout becomes the least predictable aspect of this. How many people who are Trump first-time voters will show up, and how will they behave once they cast their vote for the top of the ticket? Will they boycott Republicans they consider to be establishment officials or figures? And will that enable the Democrats to recapture control of the Senate? It's a very fluid situation. And because of these layers of unpredictability, I am still... reluctant to say, oh, yeah, it's in the bag. We all know Trump's going to lose. I simply can't say that at this point. Today, in pursuit of the truth about the claims by the Clinton campaign and many Democratic allies that Russia is responsible for the hacking of the Democratic National Committee and the John Podesta emails, I called Bill Binney. He was formerly a top technical officer at the NSA. He really knows their networks and their capabilities. Bill Binney joins me in deep skepticism. While it is possible that Russia is responsible for these hacks, there are many other possibilities that clearly are not being explored. Here's an excerpt from my in-depth interview with former NSA technical officer Bill Binney.
And everything they've been saying is basically not as it would be treated like hearsay in a court of law. It would not be evidence, and it certainly isn't. And that's what I haven't seen yet. I haven't seen evidence on any of this yet. So, I mean, if you want to be a disciplined professional in the intelligence business, you don't do this kind of speculation. You pull together the basic raw evidence that proves something, and you show it. And you're not equivocating like they're doing.
Mm-hmm. And Bill, it's interesting. Just one more citation from this Vice motherboard article. It's I printed it out. It runs about 13 pages. And at the bottom of page 9, it reads thusly, "None of this new data constitutes a smoking gun that can clearly frame Russia as the culprit behind the almost unprecedented hacking campaign that has hit the DNC and several other targets somewhat connected to the U.S. presidential election." I mean, they spent 9 pages spinning this narrative of how it happened, and then they say, well, there's actually no proof.
Yeah, and that's basically what I would refer to as the counter-narrative that says, you know, what we were telling you was just obfuscation. And mm-hmm. So it's just a cover-up of truth of any sort. So they're not really interested in getting to the truth that they have to take so many pages that just throw a bunch of words out at you and speculation. So I would just treat it as nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just hearsay nonsense until somebody comes up with something that's real and proof of anything. They haven't done any of that yet. And Adolf Hitler used it very well. It says, if you're going to tell a lie, tell a big one and tell it often until it's believed. And that's what they're doing. And they're telling it from many different people, many different directions. So that kind of repetition gets into people's minds, and they think that, oh, well, it must be true because all these people are saying it.
You can hear my full conversation with Bill Binney. I'm releasing it to subscribers today at peterbcollins.com and all our outlets, including iTunes, TuneIn, Spreaker, Stitcher, and wherever you find the Peter B. Collins podcast. And it's all made possible by generous people who support my work with your subscriptions. And I'm kind of blown away when I see the recent activity from Gunnar Gunderson. He kicked in $100, and then he renewed his existing annual subscription for $50. So, Gunnar, I'm just going to name you today. You're a superstar, and I really appreciate the support. Gunnar's a very active participant in this community. I hear from him by email pretty frequently, and I really appreciate your support. I need another 10 or 20 Gunners out there. And by the way, it's G-U-N-N-A-R, not E-R. It's not a reference to a weapon. But I would like you to join in. Come on over to peterbcollins.com. There's a menu button. You click on that, pull it down, become a subscriber is your next click. It takes you to the sign-up page. That's where we display the bonus books available to new subscribers in the continental U.S. who take out an annual subscription. And I welcome your participation and support here at the Peter B. Collins Podcast. Now, into those emails that have recently been released, this one's a doozy. Last year, as Hillary Clinton was getting ready to launch her campaign for president, there was big controversy inside the campaign because the candidate was insistent. She wanted to collect $12 million for the Clinton Foundation from the King of Morocco, Mohammed VI. $12 million. Campaign manager Robbie Mook and longtime confidant John Podesta, that's his email account that got hacked, said that this would look bad. Huma Abedin tried to explain that it was too late to back out. This was her idea, HRC's idea, Abedin wrote to Podesta. Our office approached the Moroccans, and they 100% believe they are doing this at her request. The king has personally committed $12 million both for the endowment and to support the meeting. It will break a lot of China to back out now, when we had so many opportunities to do it in the past few months. Well, there was eventually a compromise. Hillary didn't go collect the money herself. She sent Bill and Chelsea to pick up the $12 million. Now, we're told that all these contributions are in the past and she doesn't owe anybody anything. This was just a year and a half ago. And she was so determined to collect that money that she put her campaign at risk. She overruled the, I think, appropriate advice that came from her campaign team. Now, I don't watch the Sunday talk shows, but I'm reading an account here of how Chris Wallace pressed Robbie Mook, the campaign manager for Clinton, this past Sunday on Fox News Sunday. Wasn't that classic pay-to-play? There's nothing new here, Mook said. But Robbie, there is some new stuff. Emails show that you were not happy at all at the idea of this meeting and her going there. He said, we didn't want her going overseas. I didn't want her going overseas before the campaign was kicking off. Again, these are stolen documents. See how he does that? He tries to deflect attention and avoid giving a real answer by saying the documents are stolen, they came from Russia. And so I continue to be quite amazed at what they are able to get away with in this campaign season. There's another email that surfaced that is interesting, and there's nothing criminal about this, at least not from what I have in front of me. But a guy named David Fenton, who was running a liberal PR firm in Washington until he shut it down in late 2015 after massive allegations that he personally sexually harassed staff members, Fenton Communications met with John Podesta and put forward a proposal that apparently Podesta had asked for, aimed at making the Murdoch media empire and its denial of climate change a major issue. And the goal was to spend $3 million to essentially buy advertising on Fox News and in Murdoch publications like the Wall Street Journal in order to shame Murdoch and the people who consume his media into believing in climate change. Now, I think it's kind of a fool's errand, but it's not illegal to use campaign money and buy ads and try to influence the coverage of the Murdoch media empire. But ultimately, the plan was never activated, and as I mentioned, David Fenton is now a disgraced former Clinton PR maven. Over at the New York Times, you'll want to check this out. I'm linking to it in the show file for this podcast. They made a list of 282 people, places, and things that Donald Trump has insulted on Twitter. Now, this is a keepsake. This is something you'll want to save for the future when you look back at this bizarre Trump circus from 2016. Now, one of those insults that Hillary Clinton is a nasty woman that he unloaded during the third debate last week is now being turned into a badge of honor. And credit Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. With Hillary Clinton at her side yesterday, she gave a real rousing speech. She said, "Women have had it with guys like you, Donald, and nasty women have really had it with guys like you. Get this, Donald. Nasty women are tough, nasty women are smart, and nasty women vote. And on November 8, we nasty women are going to march our nasty feet to cast our nasty votes to get you out of our lives forever." And she went on to say, "He thinks that because he has money, he can call women fat pigs and bimbos. He thinks because he's a celebrity, he can rate women's bodies from 1 to 10. He thinks that because he has a mouthful of Tic Tacs, he can force himself on any woman within groping distance." The Time Warner and AT&T merger, it's actually, I believe, an acquisition by AT&T, is facing a tough road with investors. On the first day of trading after this plan was announced, Time Warner shares fell 2.2% below the offer price by almost $20, and AT&T shares fell 1.5%. So this could lead to the collapse of the deal. And I know many people who would applaud that, particularly given the latest expose, this one coming from the Daily Beast, and I commend the reporter on this, Kenneth Lipp. AT&T is spying on Americans for profit, according to new documents. And the article opens with a case that you've never heard about. It's an unsolved murder of a family of four who disappeared in the California desert a few years ago. And investigators suspected that a guy named Charles Merritt was responsible. But they couldn't find any evidence in order to make an arrest and move forward with the case until they turned to AT&T's Project Hemisphere, a secretive program that searches trillions of call records and analyzes cellular data to determine where a target is located, with whom he speaks, and potentially why. Now, we've been told that these kinds of efforts are only to protect us from terrorism and foreign threats. But this is a fairly, you know, routine investigation of a multiple murder that occurred in 2010. And so they searched his phone records, and, well, that's how we learned about Hemisphere. So it was initially argued that this was needed for the war on some drugs, and it was sold, not given. This is not a matter of simple collaboration or AT&T responding to a court order. They built a product that they sell to law enforcement agencies. They sell your information and my information, and we're the innocent people. And AT&T has quite a bit of market power. They own more than three-quarters of U.S. landline switches, and they have the second-largest share of the nation's wireless infrastructure and cell phone towers. And I'm glad that the Daily Beast credits my good friend Mark Klein, who originally pulled back the curtain on the NSA installation at AT&T's offices on Folsom Street in San Francisco, going back to, 2006 or so. So I recommend that you read this article so that you have an understanding of how AT&T is a dangerous corporation. And if they're allowed to take over Time Warner, they'll own CNN, they'll own HBO, and they will have a lot of ability to influence the media, particularly when it comes to surveillance issues. And I'm very concerned about that, as you might guess. Our pal Jason Leopold has done it again through the release of documents that the government has been hiding for over 4 years now. He got the results of a study of post-traumatic stress disorder that is found among troops who have served at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Now, over the last few years, about 28,000 American service members, mostly Navy and Army members, have served at some point at Guantanamo Bay, and a survey found that of 1,400 troops who were surveyed, 565 developed behavioral health conditions and showed signs of PTSD directly associated with deployment at Guantanamo. Nearly 300, or 1 in 5, were considered a high behavioral health risk, meaning they had suicidal thoughts or a behavioral health condition, such as anxiety or severe depression, requiring intensive medication management or therapy. 75% of the troops evaluated didn't have pre-existing behavioral health conditions, so it's pretty clear that most of them got it as a result of their service. 44% of those surveyed engaged in potentially hazardous alcohol use. 44% in the Navy said their deployment was harming my relationship with my spouse or significant other. So this is a very serious issue. We also know that people who fly the drones and participate in the remote control aerial air force that we have today have very high levels of stress and PTSD, and for the most part, other than these studies, it is not being addressed. It's great to hear an honest voice coming from the United Nations. Philip Alston is the special rapporteur on extreme poverty and human rights. And he has spoken up, calling it a disgrace that the UN has dodged its responsibility for introducing cholera into Haiti in 2010. Peacekeepers were sent there from Nepal. At least one of them carried the bacteria. More than 9,000 people have died in Haiti as a result, and many others have been sickened. And it is just a relief to hear Alston say the UN's explicit and unqualified denial of anything other than a moral responsibility is a disgrace. If the UN bluntly refuses to hold itself accountable for human rights violations, it makes a mockery of its efforts to hold governments and others to account. He accused the Office of Legal Affairs at the UN of coming up with a patently artificial and wholly unfounded legal pretense for insisting that the organization must not take legal responsibility for what it has done, and they say that that advice came from the United States. In Pakistan today, a deadly assault in Baluchistan on the city of Quetta, where at this hour more than 60 people have died and 110 were injured, after a team of heavily armed suicide attackers stormed a police training academy, and it sounds like a very devastating attack. Out in the Great Plains of the United States in North Dakota, the Standing Rock Reservation, things are heating up. The pipeline construction teams are hoping to finish their work within the next 30 days or so. And so Native Americans and their allies, the water protector protesters, submitted to arrest over the weekend, and they have expanded the area that they are protesting in to try to block construction. So they expanded to two new campsites on Sunday in order to more directly confront the pipeline builders, and this has led to another showdown. And we can't count on the sheriff's department there in that part of North Dakota to operate in a fair manner that respects the First Amendment rights of these nonviolent protesters. But it with just about 30 days remaining on the construction schedule, things are getting hotter at Standing Rock. And finally today, my friend Roger Shuler and his wife Carol have suffered grave injustices in Alabama from in retribution for the journalism that Roger has practiced at the Legal Schnauzer blog. And today I'm linking to his post about the lawsuits that he has announced. They were filed back in March, March and one in April, against the people who Roger believes were responsible for the retaliation that he faced, including the 5 months that he spent on a contempt charge in prison, a totally bogus and unconstitutional effort to silence him. So he has sued Liberty Duke and that group of people who won they got a verdict, but it wasn't fair because it was a one-sided trial in a kangaroo court manner. And they've also sued Jessica Medeiros Garrison and others who are related to another case where a bogus claim of defamation was entered into judgment. So I fully support the Shulers. They're having a tough time financially again, and they're living in a flea bag motel in Missouri on an almost day-to-day basis. So if you've got a little extra cash and you could hit their PayPal button at legalschnauzer.blogspot.com, your humble host would be very pleased. Thanks for listening to my daily news and comment podcast. It's available on YouTube if that makes it easier for you to access. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails.